Me and Alan this time on the pre-record is going to be talking top five offensive moves and a lot of other good stuff. What is up, Dolphin fans? Hope you guys are having a fantastic Friday. Again, let us know if you like this format. We will have more than just the two of us on here at some days, but just today, just me and Alan. We're going to be chopping it up, talking some Miami Dolphin football, and shout out to the sponsor Prize Picks. You play $5, you get 50 instantly using that promo code HMA. And they have a future lineup over here for the Miami Dolphins, you know, that I found to be very interesting. Especially with, you know, they got Devon Achane, 974 rushing yards, more or less on that one. They also have Devon Achane, 424 and a half receiving yards, which I thought was very interesting. And they have 300 plus yard games passing from Malik Willis. They only have half a game. He's definitely going to pass for more than 300 more than once. These are all very, very interesting. But yeah. Super fun. Go check them out. Click the link in the description. You could do stuff like this. You got the World Cup, ton of other stuff happening right now. Go get that $5, get 50 instantly with that promo code HMA. So we're going to jump into this big offseason, a lot of moves for the Miami Dolphins. We're going to kind of talk about top five. We're just going to, you know, look at the moves that were made and impactful. It could be positive or negative. Top five moves. I would say one that could be both impactful positively and negatively is Tua. Had to move on from him.
Yeah, and this is where some folks are like chiding, you know, like, what's the word I'm looking for? They're chiding. Well, it's late. I have my cup of coffee here as we're dipping this. I'm not very sharp right now. They're scolding us for keeping talking about Tua, but part of the reason it's very relevant is the Dolphins made the decision of carrying an insanely large cap number on a guy without having his services on the roster. So if he balls out, if he balls out with Atlanta this year, is not only like you could have had him, but you're paying for him basically not to be here. So without a doubt, it's a very, very consequential move. And this is why, yes, it makes sense to keep an eye on what he's doing.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's I guess you could say the positive is that they are moving on and they're trying to get better at the quarterback position. But that negative is that giant dead cap, like the humongous dead cap that they are dealing with, not only this year, but also next year. He's also on the books. So we're going to be talking about him for a while until he's off the books.
Yeah, like it or not, it's not like it's not like we have an obsession with the guy. It's just like he's still relevant as long as he's still on the books, I should say, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, fans did talk about Tannehill for a while, you know, so it is a prevalent part of the Miami Dolphins right now. And regardless if you hate him or not, he is top 10 all-time production, I guess you could say, Miami Dolphin quarterback. Like, would you put him in the top 10, Tua?
Dude, here's the sad part. It's a pretty short list.
That's what I'm saying.
In terms of production, I mean, you almost have to put him third, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Marino Grisi, and after that, who? I mean, Chad Pennington was better in 2008 than I would say probably two a year, maybe 2023, you can make an argument. And again, it's you will go back and forth on how much was it Tua, how much was it Tyreek's, and all the speed and the scheme and all that. But for totality of for the body of work, yeah, I don't know. I think Tua might be three. I mean, Tannehill also is another one who I don't think anybody would accuse him of being a great Dolphins quarterback. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not a whole lot to choose from. And that's
you could put Tannehill over Tua just because of the availability of Tannehill versus Tua, but the production is like that's where you kind of can start nitpicking the two quarterbacks. But where would you put the trading Waddle? Because that's obviously a top five move this offseason. Would you say that's more of a positive or negative? Because Halfley and Sullivan came out and did say they were trying to get ahead of the contract with him. Would you say that's more of a positive or negative, the trade of Waddle?
Getting a first-round pick for him, I think it was a positive. And again, you have financial considerations have to come into play here. Getting Chris Johnson for the next several years, or Chris Johnson on his rookie contract versus what Jalen Waddle would have cost you over the next 3 or 4 years, there's no way you can complain about that move. And once they had made the decisions with Chubb, with Tua, which Tua was one that could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Chubb from even the middle of last year, there's no way he was coming back at his cap number. Tyreek, there was no way he was coming back at his cap number. Who else? Minka Fitzpatrick. The only way he was coming back is if the Dolphins had decided to run it back again with most of the same cast of characters. Once Mike McDaniel was fired, you figured he was gone. So they went, at that point out, they were all in. So Jalen Waddle fits into that whole notion of we're going to blow it all up. We're going to wind up with a very, very low salaried roster. And all the national media analysts are going to rank us 31st or 32nd. And take shots all over the place. Fine, we'll deal with it. And we'll just start building from here.
Do you think the Minka trade happened so quickly because they needed to clear up cap space to get Malik Willis? Or do you think they weren't getting anything high from Minka?
Oh, I think they got a seventh form. I mean, like, holy smokes. And I think they came to a very quick conclusion. And I'm sure they shopped them around. Remember, they did shop them around.
Yeah. And
the feedback they got is take the seven and be happy with it. And this is why. And normally you wouldn't want to trade a high-end player to a division rival. Where the Dolphins are, it doesn't matter because the Dolphins are not competing with the Jets for the division title in 2026.
No.
But even if they were at that point, they weren't going to get anything better than a seventh-round pick. And it's because Minka also wanted a new deal, which made it complicated.
So they not only were they only going to get a seventh, they had to send him somewhere that was willing to give him that new contract, because you couldn't send him to Buffalo. Buffalo didn't have the money to pay him, and whereas the Jets had the cap space to give him that ridiculous contract that he's getting now.
Yep. Man, you're not, I mean, give me your thoughts on those two. I mean, are you disappointed that Waddle wasn't kept as a potential offensive weapon for Malik Willis in 2026 and perhaps part of a quick turnaround if they do something? I can't even bring myself to saying this year, sorry TD, when you're going to watch this, to say them doing anything in 2026, but in 2027 Jalen Waddle could have been a big part of it.
I like that. I'm not upset with the trade. I thought it was very smart, and I liked that Sullivan is really sticking to his guns on trying to fix the cap, because we've talked about it time and time again. Greer seemed to try to fix problems by throwing money at it, like with Hill, with Ramsey, with, all of these guys, oh, they're upset, just pay them, give them more money, or, oh, we have these glaring needs, let's overpay for free agency, bring them in. Whereas, it seemed like Sullivan is like, we have to get ahead of these things, and they drafted three wide receivers, and, hopefully one of those three, I'm leaning more towards Chris Bell when he's healthy, can be that Waddle replacement. So it was smart. And, obviously we're going to be looking at Waddle, and we're going to be looking at Chris Johnson and being like, all right, well, who's having the better career now? Because they're attached to each other, just like Rutledge and Jonah Savanaya are attached to each other, which when we traded up too, you were the one who was like, could have stayed Pat. You were right.
I didn't pretend to know all the ins and outs about both guys. All I said at the time of the move was like, if you're going to make that trade, Jonas Savainaya better be considerably better than Tate Radledge. And as a rookie, he wasn't.
Nope.
And I want to say something, though, in defense of Chris Greer, because you mentioned, I don't want to say the panic moves, but the let's throw money at fixing problems to maintain, because they were in a championship window, a go-for-it-all window. And one would think the mandate from up top was we're going for it. Once you make the trade for Tyreek Hill and you sign Teron Armstead, then you make the trade for Bradley Chubb. So I didn't have any major issues with some of the moves they made, other than when we got to the summer of 2024, which is when, to me, it all fell apart for the Dolphins. Tua extension, Ramsey contract extension or restructure, whatever, when you had no reason to, other than Ramsey was huffing and puffing and you blinked. And the same with Tyreek. And it backfired like nobody's business.
Because then you put yourself, you know, if we didn't get rid of Greer and McDaniel, they'd be even in a worse situation. Because at least with, you know, Halfley and Sullivan, they're new. So 2026 for them is all we're trying to right the ship. If we didn't get rid of Greer and McDaniel, because there was the talk that McDaniel was going to start Quinn Ewers, they would have had no money to do anything. And it would, like, you're trying to now put a competent team together to be competitive in your fifth year, and you'd have no money to do any of it, and you would have been screwed.
I think they would have had to have been some sacrifices made, and the whole Quinn Ewers thing, that's based off of the Darren Waller comment that needs a turnover. Which I may or may not buy. I don't think Mike McDaniel was gonna stay put, or given the chance to stay put with a sort of reset, which may be what you're looking for. Do we really think the Dolphins were gonna be in go for it mode again, kicking the can down the road again with Quinn Ewers at quarterback? And I say this with all due respect to Quinn Ewers. No, I don't have a vendetta against Quinn Ewers, but trying to be realistic here also.
We don't have TD here, so we're trying to be realistic. Let's talk about this, you know, the guys that are flying under the radar.
That was me who suggested this topic, and I'm gonna ask you the question, because I wrote about this on MiamiDolphinsOnTheSide.com. Is you live in South Florida right now? Big week for South Florida. Not only there was a World Cup match on the pitch at Hard Rock Stadium. What is this doing here? At Hard Rock Stadium this week, the Florida Panthers won two Stanley Cups in a row not so long ago, acquired Brady Tkachuk, who's a high-end offensive player, to join his brother. And then, of course, the Miami Heat acquired Giannis Antetokounmpo in a mega trade that completely has reshaped their franchise. So major headlines coming out of there. And in the meantime, nobody's talking about the Dolphins other than the fact that they're going to completely suck. And my thought was, like, I have one vantage point from a journalist who covers the team. You as a fan, do you almost like this notion of, like, nobody's talking about them. There are no expectations. Nobody's going to be picking at their warts because that's already done. Is that almost preferable than, let's say, the last couple of years when, you know, there was expectation and there was a good chance you knew deep down you're going to be let down?
Yeah, because as a Dolphin fan, it always happened that when we went into a season and there was that expectation, you know, 2009, 2017, fell flat on our faces every year. Oh, look at the Dolphins. You know, they just won the division. You know, we're going to pick them to blah, blah, blah. Whereas now this year, I've seen, you know, fan sites give us 2 wins, 4 wins, top 3 picks. You know, everyone thinks we're going to suck. I prefer that. I prefer to come out and surprise people. Now, do I think we're going to win 7 games? No. Like, as of right now, the stuff that's coming out of OTAs and stuff, I have them 5 to 6 wins. But I prefer them to be under the radar just because the way they play when it just seems like they play different versus, you know, 2024, you know, 2023, we were hot, we got injured, and then 2024 started off 2-7. And, you know, it's just what the Dolphins do. And they've done it for so long that when there's expectations, they never meet it. So I prefer to be flying under the radar just so, you know, you don't get hurt, because it's Dolphin fans. Jesus Christ.
What a heartache there.
Seriously, do you ever see that meme where the mom is holding the kid in the pool, and then, like, there's a kid closer to the picture and he's kind of like drowning. And then there's, like, someone made a meme of that, of the Miami area. So they're holding up, I think it's the Panthers holding up the Heat, and then the Marlins are drowning, and then they're right below it is a skeleton on a chair in the bottom of the ocean. It's the Dolphins. Like, they just the Dolphins are just, when it comes to Miami area right now, it's just, they know, it's just not good. What's going on with Miami and everything, like, it's bad. You know, how bad should we expect 2026 to be? Like, should we look at, because I'm even going to make a video talking, you know, comparing 2019 to this year. Was 2019 a more talented roster than 2026?
No. In fact, I looked at it, and this team, particularly on offense, has way more pieces than it. That 2019 team on offense was like, woof. Mm. Remember, because that offseason, they traded Ryan Tannehill. Your running backs, 2019, the leading rusher was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
When, I mean, I love Ryan Fitzpatrick, but if you're leading rusher, you got a problem. The wide receivers, it was Devontae Parker and nobody else. Gesicki's a good receiving tight end, but we all know what he is as a blocker, as a complete tight end. And the offensive line, you think the offensive line has been bad in recent years? 2019, woof. but you look at this offense got some pieces, and I don't care. There's a ranking on ESPN with he's at 32nd. He's ranking the running back, wide receiver, tight end combos, and 32nd clearly. And he called the wide receiver core might be the worst he's seen in recent memory. And I pointed this out actually on a recent episode of The Collective. Go back and look at the 2008 Dolphin wide receivers. This one's actually more accomplished. And in 2008, last I checked, they won the AFCs because of the Wildcat. So offensively, they're eons better in 2019. Defensively, if that 2019 team had a couple of pieces, you had Jerome Baker, who was in the second year. You had Christian Wilkins, who was a rookie first-round pick. And then you had guys in the secondary. You had Xavier Howard. You had Micah Fitzpatrick at the start. Of course, he was gone after two games. Bobby McCain was there. I'm trying to think if Rashad Jones might have still been on the roster at that time. But anyway, there were some pieces on defense, though not great. Whereas this year, I think it's an eons better roster than it was in 2019 with what you have on offense. And if you look at that year, and this is one part that I go back to it, and 5-4 down the stretch. With wins, not only everybody remembers the finale against the Patriots at Gillette Stadium, also that big game against the Eagles that they won with Mountaineer shot. Eagles made the playoffs that year.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of the season, the Dolphins were a competitive team. And I would attribute a lot of that to the coaching of Brian Flores, say whatever you want about it. Now, this is going to come down to, is Jeff Hafley going to be in that league in terms of a head coach? We don't know. We just do not know. But to me, I am way more interested in the way this season plays out in 2019 based on the fact they have a better roster. There's the unknown with Jeff Hafley, where there was the unknown with Brian Flores. And, of course, Malik Willis, which is a much bigger unknown than Ryan Fitzpatrick was in 2019. And I'm really fascinated by how he's going to pan out at quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that is the thing that, you know, a lot of people and Dolphin fans are looking at 2026 being, you know, what can Hafley do with this team? Because like you said, Flores did something with less. And what is Malik Willis? You know, like, that is the biggest question. Are they going to, because Sullivan came out and essentially said that he wanted to do two off seasons around Malik, which I'm hoping that was just talk. Because if Malik comes out and he like, he's bad, then you got to draft a quarterback next year. Like, if you're in the top three, it's like, how do you not take one of these quarterbacks? But I know they're also saying, and again, this is far down the line, that 2028 also looks like a good year to take a quarterback. But what would they need to see out of Malik to be like, okay, let's continue to build around him? Like, obviously, the wins aren't all, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. The wins aren't all on the quarterback, but, you know, we've seen good quarterbacks elevate the receivers around them. Hell, we saw Tom Brady do it his whole entire career, where he had guys like Branch and, you know, Welker and Edelman, that Brady made those guys. You know, it wasn't the other way around. even Josh Allen, and you know, look at Drake May. He didn't really have anyone. So we got to see what he can elevate. I think that's like the biggest thing. So it's like, how far are they going to let him go?
And here's the thing, though, that will not be measured statistically or by one loss record. Mm-hmm. And this is basically, it's going to be John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley's eye test. And mm-hmm. they've already done the first part of the eye test the last 2 years in Green Bay, where they got convinced that, yeah, this guy has the goods. Well, now mm-hmm. he's got to show it. And
that scares the crap out of me, because if he doesn't, and if he's bad, and if he's...
Well, but here's the thing, Doug, here's the thing. Mm. Understand, this is the signature move that they've made so far.
Yeah.
The quarterback position. Mm. If they're wrong on that, immediately, I don't want to say they're halfway out the door, but the door's creaking open. I mean, this is, you want to talk about a gigantic, bold move immediately, putting the stamp on your tenure.
Mm-hmm.
That was it right there.
They went hard after him. They went right after Malik. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. It was like, here's the tampering period. All right, we're signing Malik Willis to $22.5 million contract a year.
Would have been a lot easier for them to just go, we'll bring back Quinn Ewers. We'll mm-hmm. sign one of those veterans for a 1 year contract. Mm-hmm. And then let them battle it out. Hopefully, you know, catch lightning in the bottle that Ewers was a Brock Purdy type seventh round pick. If not, we'll come back and draft a quarterback high.
Yeah.
That's not the way they went. They had to have some kind of strong conviction on Malik Willis. And then on top of that, booting Tua out and basically eating the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a signature move, which is another one of the reasons, by the way, why I keep saying this notion that there's a quarterback competition is just insane to me.
there is not. Because we were, you know, I think, I don't know if all four of us were, but I know me, you, and Omar were talking about, like, the notion of, you know, bringing Jimmy Garoppolo or bringing one of those guys to compete with yours. And, you know, I think at one point we were all like, oh, you know, Malik priced himself out of Miami. And the Dolphins were like, nope, he didn't. We're still going to go for him and pay him a lot of money. But, you know, then it scares the crap out of me that if he doesn't pan out, do I trust Sullivan to draft a quarterback?
But here's the thing. I don't think it's 45 mil over 2 years for, you know, for a quarterback. It's not ridiculous.
Yeah, nowadays, no. That's
and it's not that long. I mean, again, if we're all going under the premise that they weren't going to win in 2026 anyway, I think we can all agree on that.
Mm.
Basically, you're flushing 2027 if Malik Willis basically isn't the answer. So I don't think 1 year for that amount of money, I can't. There's no way. Even if he turns out to be a bust, there's no way I'm going to go back to each other. Yeah, that was a sucky move. Just like I refuse to say the Dolphins making that trade for Josh Rosen, even now, was a bad trade. Even though it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins had waited for so long to get a franchise quarterback. They gave up a 2 and a 5. Is that really that big of a price if you think the guy's going to do it? Well, the eval was wrong.
And it's so funny, too, because when it came out, the news of Josh Rosen and the Dolphins wanting, or, you know, the rumors. I made a video before the draft, and I was like, please don't. Just please don't. But then when they actually did it, I was not upset because they, like, waited. They like traded back with the Saints first and then they traded for, like, they picked up a second for the next year and then they traded. So I was like, all right, you know, I don't hate it that much, but, you know, still, we'll see what happens. And I, you know, a lot of times when the Dolphins make moves, I'm, you know, my first instinct is I have no control over this. So let's give the guy a shot. And that's where I am with Malik Willis right now. I'm like, I didn't want to sign him to a big contract. I wanted to have a competition. We're here now. Let's see what Malik can do, you know, and.
Funny anecdote, by the way, on that Josh Rosen trade. So whenever there's a move like this, somebody in the media relations department will inform us of the details of the trade. So they inform us it's Josh Rosen and a 2 and a 2nd. And we're all thinking, I can tell you unanimously, oh, Josh Rosen and a 5 for a second round pick. That's not bad. And then we're told, no, it's Josh Rosen for a 2 and a 2nd going to Arizona. And then we're like, okay. Well, you know, Rosen and a 5 for a 2, that'd have been like, oh, okay, yeah, right, great.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not gonna fault. And the other part, anybody can have their opinions right now and play prognosticator forecaster of how Malik Willis is gonna pan out. Does anybody really know? Seriously?
No.
Be honest. We don't.
No one has an idea at all. And I think that's what like this season is based on, is the entertainment of that. Like, all right, well, let's see, you know, we haven't seen a quarterback like this play for us that has those, that ceiling, that potential. So it's going to be
that kind of dual threat. Never. I mean, Ryan Tannehill could move, but he wasn't like fast like Malik Willis is. And again, he had Marino for 18 years and for all his 17, for all his brilliance as a passer, not exactly mobile. Bob Greasy could move early on in his career, but he was not mobile. David Woodley was David Woodley was a very mobile, good running quarterback, but he wasn't a terribly impressive passer. So Pennington also is a statue, even though the Dolphins have not had that kind of guy to that level. So it's a totally different experience, you know, for us who cover the team and for the fans to get what we're going to see at quarterback. And it's part of the allure. It's a different kind of season where, you know, it's not like 2024 where they're coming off, you know, that playoff loss to Kansas City. And it's like, oh, if we hadn't had all those injuries, let's see how far we can take it now. Or even 2025. 2025 was interesting last year. Heading into that season, it was like, I didn't like it. I had bad mojo. There was bad mojo throughout the offseason, up to and leading to the trade of with the Steelers. In fact, we should do one time on the collective, a 1 year anniversary show on that. The Ramsey, Jonnu Smith trade. And that whole thing kind of, to me, and the Instagram with the rotten orange, it just put bad juju over the Dolphins all off season.
Minka didn't talk to you guys for like what, a month almost? It was weird. That whole situation was just weird.
Yeah.
And then everyone's coming out and Chubb is saying, you know, oh, you know, we lied. We didn't really buy in. And it's just like,
yeah.
What is going on right now? Let's get to this last topic. Best pass rusher in Dolphins history. If you don't know, the Dolphin Collective, which is at Dolphins HMA on Twitter, said if you needed a sack on third down and you had to pick one of these Dolphins to get it, who would you feel confident in? And it was Cameron Wake or Jason Taylor. Fun fact, that's number one and number two in the sacks on the Miami Dolphins. Jason Taylor having 131 and Cameron Wake having 98. So for me, it's an easy, you know, I'm going Jason Taylor all day, every day. I love Cameron Wake. He's also one of my favorites, but Jason Taylor's he was just different, man. The speed he had and the ability to get around the tackles, it was just very easy for him. And then the ability to also intercept the ball was also just ridiculous. So it for me, it's easy. But Cameron Wake had power. You saw that on the walk off safety against
the wake off
against the Cincinnati Bengals, where he went inside. So he wasn't even going against the tackles. He went inside and going against the guard in the center. He just blew it up. So
here's where I hesitated. And to me, it was like JT was a better all around player again because he dropped into coverage. He got the picks and all that. They both were very good at forced fumbles in addition to getting the sacks. I am trying to think of a Jason Taylor moment at a critical. And I preface everything by saying, I love Jason Taylor. Don't at me. but I'm trying to think like to me, like the quintessential Jason Taylor plays that come to my mind are like the pick sixes when we're going against Minnesota, against Chicago. Mm. That was a season when the Dolphins were 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
Not his fault, but doesn't change that fact. And then another play that comes to my mind is in 2000. I don't know if you remember or if you were watching the Dolphins back then against the Cincinnati Bengals. I think they were down like 13-3 late in the first half. They were playing like absolute dog crap.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball, I might be at the Cincinnati 35 with like 10 seconds left. For some reason that still makes zero sense to me to this day, they have a Kelly Smith drop back to pass where their chances of scoring, getting into scoring position are microscopic. And then JT just blows by the left tackle, pops him from behind. The ball pops out. JT picks it up, scoots in for a touchdown. It's 13-10. Dolphins win 31-16. Like, completely flipped the game like that. But he doesn't have anything to match a sack for a safety in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. So that's why I wasn't that quick to go like, boom. And if we're going to talk like, as the title here says, best pass rush in Dolphins history, for older folks, I'm going to throw out Bill Stanfield, who was really, really good. And he didn't play nearly as long. He only played from like 69 to 76, wound up having knee issues. But that dude was a baller. It was like 11th overall pick in that 69 draft. Then Joey Porter had one hellacious year in 2008. Everybody remembers the Wildcat, but Joey Porter went, even the Wildcat game, Ronnie Brown had four touchdowns. Joey Porter had four sacks. So best pass rusher in Dolphins history. That's a tough one.
Who had a better sack celebration, Jason Taylor or Cam Wake?
I don't even remember what Cam Wake did.
Like a roar. He roared.
They're stripping off the shit. I don't like either one of them, to be honest with you.
Jason Taylor's was my favorite because sometimes he would like put the box up and he kind of walk away and then he'd walk back and punch it. I was younger, so you know what?
Let's watch your circle.
2000, I was what? 13 in 2000. So,
Can't even remember. The chop one's pretty good too.
Oh yeah, I love chops. If only I could see it more.
Wow. Shot. Yeah.
Yeah, end of his rookie year though, we were in on it because he was, you know, he's getting the sacks and he was doing the chopping and we were loving it. And then all of a sudden he just disappeared. So, you know.
No, in the second half of the second half of that season, we go into the season last year and I was like, look out for chop. And he was like
yeah, look out for me. I don't know where I
went. I read the comments all the time, even after the videos are posted. And for those who keep giving us crap, Omar and I, when we talk about how guys look physically, you know, like there's a gentleman who says like, well, no, the combine says this guy, that's fine. I'm just telling you what the guy looks like to my eyes. Like, for example, Michael Taft, you can tell me he measured 5'11" or 6 feet, whatever. I'm sorry, the guy looks small to me. Sorry. I mean, and I stood right next to him. He was at a podium giving the interview. Okay. And my first reaction to Chop Robinson as his rookie mini camp was like, ooh, that's not very big. Like Cam Wake is like, cut. Yeah. Like nobody's business. Chop Robinson is smaller and he's not nearly as cut to where he better win with his speed, because if an offensive lineman gets his mitts on him, I mean, does he have the ability to disengage?
That's the other thing that they have to realize. You are seeing them with other football players, and you're using, okay, this is what he looks like, but I've seen Rashad Jones. Like if you take Taft and put him next to Rashad Jones, it's like, you know, it's night and day. Same thing with Chop and Cam Wake. So it's not like you're bashing them. It's just it's your comparison. This is.
And there's also something to be said about body composition. I mean, it's like, cause I think, Didn't I read like Malik Willis's physical dimensions are official? Physical dimensions are exactly the same as Tua's. He looks sturdier than Tua.
He looks wider. He looks like he could take a few hits versus Tua, who.
Oh, and then sometimes there are mistakes that pop up. Josh Uche had to point out that no, he's not 226 as was listed. 255 is what he said, and no, he doesn't look 226. So, again. Sometimes you gotta. I mean, I'm gonna believe this. I'm gonna be. So I'm gonna go by.
Yeah, but that is all we got for you guys today. Hopefully, again, you enjoy these pre-records. Who's gonna be on next week? We don't know, but comment below. Let us know what you guys think. Go check out Alan Papart, Miami Dolphins on SI. Don't forget about the other guys. TDYouTube.com/TDSpinTalk and Omar Kelly over there on the Miami Herald. You can check me out on Miami. You check me out on Miami.
There you go.
YouTube.com/WDWrong. But we will see you guys probably Monday at 12:30, the usual time. But we are out.